down at 4-26. Here's Foster. Oh, boy. Foster down the sideline. Foster still running. Coach could be in the game. Touchdown.
And right through the middle, right behind Vontae Leach, the big blocking fullback. He's trying to get run down. Mike Huff's got a chance at him and can't pull him back. Kill him.
First and goal back at the 15. Lynch not going to get anything. Well, maybe second effort. He comes out the back of it, and he's in. Touchdown.
Eighth straight game that he scored a touchdown. I don't know how he came out the backside of that pile. What a run.
Absolute power. Corrupts. Absolutely.
Let's go. Ain't no room for hesitation up in here. It's time to leave it on the field. Because it's game time. It's time to make your hard work pay off. Make your mom and dad proud. Make your opponent pay the price. It's time to step up and get it done, son. You go hard or you go home. From the first whistle to the last, bring it all day, every play. Because you know your boys are going to put on the line for you. They got your back, so you better have theirs. This is about the team. It's about pride. It's about who's the hungriest. So what's it going to be, man? You going to leave it on the field, or you going to leave it inside? You going to leave it or something in your tank, or you going to do what champions do? Leave nothing. Leave nothing. Leave nothing.
I want winners.
Absolutely, and welcome once again, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. You heard it all. If you didn't know what the theme of the show is, then you definitely is not in tune with what's happening today. You know who I am. I am JT, a.k.a. The Master, and this is The Master Plan. The number to call in is 347-637-3220, 347-637-3220 is the number that you call in, and if you want to talk to me, this is the place to be today. I'm talking about running backs, I'm talking about running backs, and I'm talking about more running backs. This is a two-hour show. I got a bundle of information I want to get out there, a bundle of information. So sit back. Hope you have your pencil and paper and your pad ready, because I have a lot of information I want to give out there, and hopefully it will help you when I push it out there for you. Okay? I just want to make sure that you have the right information and able to use it in your drafting, okay? Because, you know, like everybody knows, the draft is coming up for a lot of people. This is the 18th of August. The 18th of August, okay? Some people are drafting today. In fact, I have a draft later on today at night, tonight. And some people, I have another draft tomorrow evening, a live draft. And throughout this week into next week, I have a few drafts, along with my fellow members of other in other leagues. They are drafting. So I've gone through quarterbacks. I've gone through tight ends. I've gone through wide receivers. Well, guess what? In my opinion, I've saved the best for last. I'm not going to go to 25. In my running backs, I'm going to 50. In fact, I'm going past 50, because past 50, there are some running backs that you've heard, if you've ever been locked up, ever been arrested, okay, the first thing the cops put on you when they arrest you is handcuffs. Well, that's what I'm going to be talking about also. Handcuffs to your stud receivers, to your some of these running backs. Some red flags for some running backs. I'm going to give you some statistics of about some running backs, not just specific running, but yeah, specific running backs, and historical specifics, because it's key to what may happen this season. Okay, now we had some historic things happen with running backs last season, season before that. I mean, it seems like it happens every season. One of these running backs comes out and does phenomenal things. Well, there's a price to pay when you do that. Okay, I want to talk to you about that. I want to explain to you that it may not be as good as you think it is. You know, it may not be as good as you think it may be. So, understand this. Let me just go through this. What constitutes a workhorse running back? Okay, we mean a back that is likely to get at least somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 touches in a game. Typically, these are your household name backs. However, okay, they also could be up and comers that people feel are going to get those kind of touches in upcoming season, but yet have to do so in the past. Regardless, the idea is to select a running back that is slated to be the feature back in an NFL offense, a.k.a. Jamal Charles, Arian Foster, Adrian Peterson, to name a few, okay? But be sure to exercise extreme caution when selecting such a back. It's very important to consider the leg injury history of a running back with respect to time. Otherwise, you may effectively pay the price for a Mercedes only to receive a Corolla, okay? There's a major injury history and the time it takes, okay? Say for this, okay? Give you a perspective on this, okay? Let's go to somebody that's fairly recent, okay? Let's go to... what I'm trying to say is this. It's very important that because a running back has sustained an injury, you have to look at the effects that injury was going to have on him in future touches, okay? Let me run this way. Let me go this way, okay? Let me go through this, all right, and then we'll go through Arian Foster had another big year last season, okay, but a consequence of that season was a large number of carries. I'm talking about rushing attempts. He finished the year as the NFL leader in that category with 351 rushing attempts. Luckily, Houston didn't make it too deep into the playoffs, which kept him from piling up even more rushing attempts on the top of already concerning number. He had 54 total playoff carries in two games. Okay, that's 27 a game. Could that spell trouble in 2013? In fantasy football, it's often difficult to predict which fantasy players will have a significant drop in production from one year to the next. This can yield devastating consequences for your team during your fantasy football draft. As you pay a premium, because you get a stud running back, more than likely, you're going to draft them in the first round, okay? And you pay a premium for a player just to have them crush your team with a very substantial season that did not warrant that high draft status. Okay, you draft them, and he's a dud. Like a few seasons ago, people drafted Chris Johnson real high off his 2011 season, and he was a dud, okay, the following season. Let's analyze yet another factor that can contribute to a disappointing fantasy season. And I've talked about this before, and I'm going to keep on talking about it, because historically, it's a fact. The effect of running back carries, meaning running back attempts. Running backs are one of the crucial positions in most fantasy football leagues. While running backs can provide a consistently high score of fantasy points week in and week out, and are in high demand on fantasy draft day, they're also prone to suffering a significant decrease in production after carrying the ball too many times the preceding season. A running back's body is a machine, and like all machines, it can only perform their function so many times before they must be replaced by a newer version or sent in for repair. With that in mind, there are two measures absolutely relative to evaluate the wear and tear of running backs. Number one, the absolute measure of the number of carries, meaning attempts, a running back has had in the previous season. Number two, the relative measure in the increase in the number of carries from season to season. Both of these measures are indicators for a potential drop-off in production from one season to the next. And I want to go through a list of players that have experienced a workload of 370 carries or more in a season up until 2011, followed by their performance in the subsequent season. Okay? Let's go to Larry Johnson, okay? And Larry Johnson had 416 carries in 2006 and had 1,700 yards, okay, with 19 touchdowns. The following year, he had 158 carries and 559 yards. He was never the same again, okay? Jamal Anderson, back in 98. 410 carries, 1,846 yards. The next season, he tore his ACL. Okay? Let's go to Eddie George. Eddie George in 2000, 403 carries, 1,821 yards. Next season, 283 carries, 1,288 yards. And with six touchdowns. He had 315 carries and 939 yards. Previous year in 2000, he had 16 carries. The following year, he had five. Let's go to Ricky Williams, 392 carries in 2003, 1,372 yards, 10 touchdowns. The following season, 2004, 168 carries, 743 yards, 6 touchdowns. So what I'm saying is this, okay? What I'm saying is this. History, and I'm looking at it, history has it. When a back carries close to or over 370 carries, carries, there's a strong chance, because history says it, is a strong chance that back will not perform the same way he performed the previous year. So temper your expectations for the top two picks or three picks or four picks, especially when I get to those top picks, because I know they have lofty aspirations. They claim that their goal is to get to a certain amount of yardage, regardless of the touchdown total, a certain amount of yardage, and temper those expectations, because history says that it may be a drop off, and besides having a drop off, that drop off may put up a red flag that player, one, will never be the same again. Two, can sustain an injury because of overwork from the previous season. I know it's a different season, but trust me when I say this, history, you can't fight history. You can't fight numbers, and you can't fight Mother Nature. I have a caller coming in here from the 301. I think I know who it is. Caller from the 301. Welcome to the Master Plan. How you doing?
What's up, Jerry? How are you, sir?
Oh, hey, how you feel, man?
Good. I had to call in and throw a monkey wrench in your theory. But you
really?
Know what? Overall, I do agree with you. Overall, for the most part, I agree with you. There will be a tendency for a back to reduce yardage in the next season after he has a breakout season. But I want you to take a look at one particular running back that won't. And history is more so on his side. Depends on how you look at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just you. Just depends on how you look at it.
Sure.
Right? Because, you know, just listening to your theory.
Mm-hmm.
Alfred Morris, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Alfred Morris had 1,600 yards last season.
Right. How many carries do you have?
He had over 300 carries. He had way over 300 carries, right?
Okay. Okay.
I believe that Alfred Morris will be over 1,300. I don't know about 1,600, but I definitely believe he'll be over 1,300, right?
Okay.
And the history for him, now, if you look at your theory and look at all running backs on a broad scale, then you would definitely think that he's going to take a decline next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sizable decline. But if you look at the running backs that were under his coach, this particular coach, he has especially ones that he deems that are producers.
Right.
I'll give you two names that debunk your theory.
Well,
Terrell Davis,
and
Clinton Portis.
And both those guys, when they have their career years, the following year that they fell off.
No.
Yep.
No.
Both of those guys when they had their career years, Terrell Davis. If I'm not mistaken, and I can look back in the stats, I think Terrell Davis.
You might want to take a look back at Terrell Davis's career, too, because his first year he was over 1,000 yards. His second year he had 1,500 yards. His third year he had 1,750.
Right.
His fourth year he had 2,008 yards.
After that
fourth year, your theory is applied. But if you look at his second year, he had 1,500 yards compared to what he had the year before, which was 1,000, and he kept increasing. So what I'm saying is, Alfred is in his second year. I expect for him to be over 1,300.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm trying to get Terrell Davis's information up as we speak. Okay, the year he ran for 2,008 yards. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, I'm trying to think, where is his carries at attempts. Okay, my theory is this. Okay, over 370 carries is the threshold. Okay, is the cutoff point. Doesn't make a difference how many yards. It's the attempts, okay? Terrell Davis, in his career year when he had 2,008 yards, he had 392 carries, okay? 392 carries. That's a lot. His following year, and this is why I'm saying this. That was 1998 when he did that. In 1999, he got hurt and had 67 carries.
Right.
He got hurt, okay? That's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about yardage.
See, but hold on.
I'm talking about what you're talking about.
I know exactly your theory. I hear your theory. But what I'm saying to you is if you go back instead of coming forward. See, and then analyzing your theory, in that career year, he had 2,008 yards and 392 mm-hmm. carries.
392 carries, yeah.
And all those carries that were before that, you got 369 the year before that.
Right.
You got 345 the year before that. You know what I'm
right.
saying? That's like
mm-hmm.
over 800 carries before he did the 392. So
yep,
it wasn't just that 1 year is what I'm saying to you. It wasn't
well,
just that year.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Right.
Look at Jamal Lewis. So look at Clinton Portis had 352 carries in 2005, ran for 1,516 yards. The following year in 2006, he only carried the ball 127 times for 523
Go
yards.
Back. But if you go back,
I'm looking at it because 2002 he had 273 carries. 2003 he had 290. 2004 he had 343. 2005
how many yards did he have those years? He was running the league those 3 years.
Yeah,
those first three years he was crushing.
Well, see, I'm not talking about yardage. I'm talking about carries. I understand what you're saying. See, and the reason why he was able to sustain and run the ball for so many yards, 2002 he had 273 carries, less than 300, and he ran for 1,500 yards. 2003 he had 290, just a little tick above that, and he ran for 1,591. 2004 he had 343. They gave him the rock a lot more. He ran for less yardage, 315 yards. 2004, they stretched him out just a slight bit more, like I said, 352 carries for 1,516 yards. And when they stretched him out up to that, that's when he dropped off, because after that, wait a minute, after that 2006 season, and that was like the third year he was in Washington, he only ran for 127 yards and 127 carries for 523 yards. Took him a while. The next year when he came back, and I'm looking at it, 2007, they bumped him back up to 325 yards. He ran for 1,262. 2008, it bumped him up a little bit more, 342. He ran for 1,487. And after that, he was no good after that because – after that, 2009, he only ran for 124 attempts with 494 yards. In 2010, 54 carries for 227. He was shot. So
what I'm saying to you is those career years,
mm-hmm.
you got to factor in all the running they did before that.
I understand, Mikal, what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
I think that gives it more, you know, a more realistic view of it, because if you are back and you've already done 1,200 and you've already had 1,200 carries, you know what I'm saying, over the past like 4 years, you know, 300 carries a season,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to expect – I should very well not to expect you to have a career year the next year. Definitely not. If you do – You're about to tap out. What I'm saying though is, if you have a running back that
mm-hmm.
That's either slightly peaking or about to peak, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean, or you know, and hasn't had that many carries, that's a good thing because I think. It's more probable that running back will succeed more than another one. I mean, because if you had, let's say, a running back has only been in 2 years, right, and he
mm-hmm.
had a career year his second year, right,
mm-hmm.
and now you're going on your third year, I would be more inclined to maybe pick him up, right? But if he's on his fourth or fifth year, something like that, like somebody like your boy AP,
mm-hmm.
I'd be very weary of AP. I love AP. I thought what he did last year was wonderful. But I don't know if I could pick him up. What year is he in now? Is eighth?
Hold on a minute. Let me tell you. One, two, three, four, five. He's in his seventh year. This will be his seventh year.
Oh, wow.
This
will
be his seventh
year. 28, 29?
He's 28.
Yeah, that's an old man for a running back.
Mm-hmm.
Show me a running back that's healthy right now, had maybe no more than two good running seasons. I don't care how many carries, it could be 200 to 300 yards, and he's healthy today, right now. I expect him to break the threshold. There's not that many backs that's there right now. Not that many. Few of them. Few of them.
Mm-hmm.
I like your boy. You don't want to turn me on him, Charles. I'm paying attention to him because he got hurt.
Yeah.
I like Doug Martin. He could do it. And depending on, and I'll go out on a limb. I like that youngin' Blunt. I just don't know what Belichick and them going to do. That boy can run.
He's more of a plotter. He doesn't have a lot of skills. He can run, but he's a guy run between the tackles. He doesn't have a lot of a burst in him. And he's a one-trick pony. He can't catch the ball. He's got hands of stone. So, and that's a problem. Most of the backs that I'm going to be talking about today, a lot of them can catch the ball out of the backfield. Some of them quite naturally. Not all backs can do that. LeGarrette Blount is one of them. That's one of the reasons why they got rid of him in Tampa Bay.
Okay.
So, all right, let me start going through these running backs because I got a lot of running backs to go through. Like I said, I'm going to start at number 50 and work my way up. And some of these are going to be the usual suspects. People have heard of these guys before, and I'm going to be talking about some of these guys as handcuffs to their stud running backs. But before I do that. And I'm glad you called in. For the simple fact is, I don't know if you've been hearing how crazy this has been going on with Mr. A-Rod and the New York Yankees, talking about all kinds of he said, she said. Besides him snitching, now his lawyer is saying that the Yankee management told the doctor that operated on A-Rod's hip, he doesn't want to ever see him on the field again. what the implications are with that is that he was telling the doctor, make sure whatever you do in the room that A-Rod doesn't come back on the field, and if that doesn't happen, then they don't have to pay him. The insurance will kick in, and they can reap the money from A-Rod's contract, and A-Rod won't be playing on the field anymore. So I don't know if you heard about that or not. I heard about it after we got off the show yesterday, and Let me put it this way. Stay tuned because there's a lot of supposedly emails that the lawyer has that the management from the Yankees sent to A-Rod that's supposed to be inflammatory, plus information also from the same guy who talked to the doctor. Supposedly sent correspondence to the doctor to insinuate the same thing that he verbalized. So, and the lawyer is saying, you know what? And the guy who verbalized this from the Yankees saying, you know, you put up or shut up. You said all this, prove it. Put it out there, because I don't think you will or can. And the lawyer said, there's no problem. We're going to put it out there, and you're going to have to answer to it. So. There's a lot going on, and in between all that, A-Rod's still playing for the Yankees.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. That, I mean, that
That's
is
mad.
That's crazy.
That's a mess. That is a mess. Huge mess.
I don't know, man. I mean, you know, this doesn't make any sense to me. It really doesn't make any sense to me. If some of this stuff is true, if they do have some email correspondence that paints Randy Levine, that's who the guy is from the Yankees, in a bad light, then he's in trouble. Randy Levine says that, we'll release A-Rod's medical records if he agrees to it. I guess trying to dispute the fact that he tried to torpedo A-Rod's career through the doctor. I don't know, man. I mean, this is you can't even make this stuff up. You can't make this stuff up. It's like a freaking soap opera in real life. Can't make it up. And only something like this. You don't see it happen anywhere else in the U.S., but only in New York. And the Yankees, no less. Unbelievable. So stay tuned in the coming weeks, people, because I do believe the sparks, even though they've been flying already, I think there's even more sparks that are going to be flying, and a lot of things are going to be coming out to light, because I think this is going to be opening up Pandora's box. And I don't know if people want to see what's in Pandora's box right now, but some people may not have a choice, and it may all come out, and the dirty laundry from one of the best-known organizations in the world may not be painted in a good light, or who knows. I got to believe there's some truth on both sides, but we'll see what happens in the coming weeks or months. Anyway, let's get to the crest of the show, and it's all about running backs. I'm going to start with my number 50, okay? He was a dud as Forte's backup, averaging a career-low 3.6 yards per carry. He did manage to get a few touchdowns on he's got a four-year, $14 million deal. He's basically a short yardage specialist. But he's definitely the handcuff to Matt Forte. But don't expect the same type of production as Matt Forte, because Michael Bush is not that type of back. Quite naturally, he's not worth a draft pick. But if you're a Forte owner, with the history of Matt Forte, you would be best off trying to handcuff this, put this guy on your bench as a handcuff to protect yourself, so at least you have a halfway effective back if you haven't gotten some of the other backs. Michael Bush would be a good back for you to pick up from the Chicago Bears. But he's strictly a handcuff, and if you wanted to handcuff Matt Forte, it's Michael Bush. You got any comments on Michael Bush before we move on here?
Nah, I don't got
no. Okay. The next guy. Now, if I go through these 50, there's about 10 other guys, okay, that are on the radar also, but they're not listed in my top 50. There are at least 10 guys, maybe 15 guys. So there's a lot of running backs out there, and depending on their situation and who's in front of them, depends on how effective it's going to be. Some of these guys are handcuffs, and some of these guys may be part of a running back by committee. And depending on how the committee swings out, whether you the one of the 50 I mentioned, or the other also eligibles or honorable mentions, I should say. You may want to pick him up and put him on your bench to possibly switch him out if the committee goes the other way. Anyway, I'll get to that near the end after I've gone through these 50, which is quite a few. This next guy, he was a fifth-round pick out of Mississippi State. He operated last year as the change of pace back for the first four games before Donald Brown got hurt. He took over as a featured back over in Indianapolis and never gave it up after that. He's a he doesn't have a lot of explosiveness, but he has quickness, and in my opinion, he's going to take a step forward. He's in a very good position, even though they drafted Ahmad Bradshaw. They traded or picked up Ahmad Bradshaw to be the featured back. And one of the weaknesses that Vic Ballard has is his pass protection. But one of the weaknesses Ahmad Bradshaw has is being able to stay healthy. Very good back when he's healthy. He can run the ball and he can catch the ball out of the backfield. But he always gets hurt. So if you happen to grab Ahmad Bradshaw for some reason, and he's one of your running back one or two, and he should be your one, but he could be your two, you need to grab Vic Ballard and pick him up and put him on your bench. And even put him on your bench anyway for the simple reason that Ahmad Bradshaw always gets hurt. And depending on his type of injury, Vic Ballard could have a substantial amount of playing time. So he's my number 49 back, but I can see him going in round 8, in a 12-team draft. I think I can see him going in round 8, round 9, somewhere around that, and I think that's good value for Vic Ballard. You got any comments on Mr. Vic Ballard, number 49.
Sir.
Oh,
sir, I'm good.
Okay. This other guy, he is a rookie. He's coming in a crowded backfield, in a very crowded backfield. He was a featured back for Vanderbilt. He rushed for 207 times for over a little over 1,100 yards. Okay.
I was about to say 11 yards.
Yeah. 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns as a senior. He moved over to a backfield of Darrell Richardson, Isaiah Pede, and now Zach Stacy is there. And let me put it this way, okay? He's got a shot. The only shot he has in being a feature back, for the most part, Darrell Richardson is going to be the feature back. Isaiah Pede is going to be the number two back, and Zach Stacy, if all things fall like I think they will, he'll be the number three back. But I can honestly say that I think before the season's out, or halfway through the season out, I have a good idea that Zach Stacy is going to at least take over the number two position in that. They're not too happy with Isaiah Pede, and Isaiah Pede is a little further up on my board, but he is going to be suspended for at least, the first week for violating the league substance abuse policy. So Zach Stacy, as long as he stays healthy, he's got a good shot to get some time in there, because Jeff Fisher already said that he's going to do a running back by committee, but Darrell Richardson is basically the starting running back. So it may be a running back by committee. throughout the year, and the committee could be any of the three. Let me put it that way. Then we move to New Orleans. New Orleans.
Hold on, I wanted to say about Jeff Fisher and the Rams. Mm-hmm. I thought that was just a disgusting move by letting let my man go, and now you. And now you've got this running back by committee. I mean, what are they doing? What are they doing? I mean,
Well, I know what they're doing. Steven Jackson's 30 years old, running back retirement age, let me put it that way for lack of a better word, is 30-plus. So they had young backs. They wanted to be able to use those young backs. They would have kept Steven Jackson if Steven Jackson would agree to what they're doing now, running back by committee. And Steven Jackson said, "No, I'm a feature back. There's no way I'm going to agree to that." So they just let him go, let him become a free agent, and then Atlanta picked him up as their feature back. So that's what happened. They wanted Steven Jackson to take a lesser role. And he wasn't gonna go for it. So it is what it is. I think he's got a lot more left in the tank. But
yeah, me too.
They wanted to go younger. So mm-hmm. and his contract was up. So he was in his option year of his contract. So in order to keep him, they had to commit themselves to a few more years. And they didn't want to do that with a back that was 30 years old, so
right.
they moved on, which is it was a financial reason that Steven Jackson is no longer in St. Louis. So that's why.
How many years did Atlanta pick him up for?
That's a good question. I got to believe it's about. At least 3 years. Let me see if I can find that out for you. Let's see if I can find that out for you. Hold on a minute here. I think Atlanta picked him up for. Let me see, Jackson. Let me see here. Oh, really?
1 year.
It may have been 1 year, yeah. Let me see what we got here.
Everybody just selling out for the ring, huh? God,
well,
hey.
They've already said it that they're all in this year to get that for that Super Bowl push. Atlanta already said that they're all in for that, so. They're trying to put the best pieces possible in every position to be able to get that. That's one of the reasons why they got the Umanure. I can't understand why they got rid of Abraham, though. That didn't make any sense to me. But
that doesn't make sense to get rid of Abraham and get Umanure because
I think they signed him because I see one year, looks like 1 year, $1.7 million for this year. So it looks like they only signed him for a year.
Yeah.
And he's 30 years old. So, like I said.
Yeah, and he's going to make more money than me, so I ain't mad.
Oh, no. I'm sorry about that. Hold on a minute here. Let me look at this again. What the heck? Come on, stop that doing that. It's a 3-year contract, $4 million guaranteed, and a total contract worth $12 million.
It's a 3-year contract.
3-year contract, 3-year, $12 million contract, and $4 million guaranteed. So basically, let me put it this way. Basically, they rented him for 1 year. Because they probably going to release him after this, depending on how things shake out. Let me put it that way. He's 30 years old. He's going to be 31 next year. and I guess depending on how he performs, depends on how long they're going to keep his ass. So.
Right.
You
right.
Know?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Let me move on to, where am I at here? Oh, yeah. Okay. They finally got their coach back this year. All right. He reached double-digit carries in just 16 games, and his role was noticeably decreased when Darren Sproles missed three midseason games with a broken hand. They also in the backfield, they had Chris Ivory and Mark Ingram. Pierre Thomas lacks special talent, but can play in all phases effectively. He is versatile and reliable. All right. And like I said, they traded Chris Ivory to the Jets, and now Darren Sproles is healthy, and there's indications that Ingram's role will expand. But that's true of Pierre Thomas also, who was listed ahead of Mark Ingram in the initial training camp depth chart. Now, the only thing about Pierre Thomas is the opportunity. He can be productive, but the Saints, as people know, aren't committed to running the football from week to week. Even though Sean Payton and supposedly there's rumblings that they may go back to what they did in their Super Bowl season of running the football more effectively, versus what they've done in the last two seasons of passing the ball a lot. Quite naturally, if you got Drew Brees, I can see why you would do that. But if you're trying to get back to a championship round, it's been documented. You had a formula to do it, and it worked. Now they're trying to go back to that formula. Pierre Thomas is, you know what? He's way down there. I mean, his average draft position is 153. In the 12-team draft, 153 is round 12, 13. You can put him on as a flyer. I don't know how much work he's going to get based on the fact is that you have three backs, really, that are working out in the backfield, Pierre Thomas, Mark Ingram, and Darren Sproles. Darren Sproles, quite naturally, is the pass-catching back. Mark Ingram can be a goal line back, but where does that leave Pierre Thomas? So,
Sproles down there?
Darren Sproles is definitely in New Orleans, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I forgot about him.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Jacquizz Rodgers from the Atlanta Falcons. He happens to be the number 46 on my board. Now, last year, Michael Turner basically had his wheels fall off, and Rodgers had every opportunity to earn more carries. He averaged last year 3.9 per carry, which is only a little tick more than Turner, and he proved better to be a change of pace. That's the problem. He rarely even changed the pace in last year. He had 53 catches, which is the fourth among running backs, but he only averaged 2.7 yards after contact, which was pretty poor, okay? Now Michael Turner's gone. In comes Steven Jackson, who once caught more passes in a single season, which was 90 in 2006, than Michael Turner had in his entire career, which is only 70. So that means that Chris Rogers' role has even reduced even more. On the third down. So he's not going to be phased out altogether in the passing game, but he could have a hard time catching as many passes as he did last season. And he's a flex position at best. But don't think that he's going to be consistent in his production, because he won't. Because, like I said, Steven Jackson is there, and Steven Jackson is a two-threat back. He can run the ball. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. Jacquizz Rodgers is a change of pace back. He's not a real strong runner, strong, consistent runner. And his forte is basically catching the ball out of the backfield. Basically a one-trick pony. And I don't like one-trick ponies at running backs. You got any comment in, Macau?
No.
All right, this guy is the next guy is defying the aging process for running backs. He's 32 years old, okay? Still running. And he averaged 5.5 yards in 2011, okay? He averaged 3.9 yards last year, battling knee issues, and he also had a concussion, all right? He looked old last year, okay? I would avoid this guy. I even would avoid – this is one guy in my opinion, okay? Even though I have him rated number 45, this is one guy I would avoid not even handcuffing with the number one back out of Buffalo. Fred Jackson is 32 years old. They already said that the feature back would be C.J. Spiller. So if you want to handcuff him, you want to stash him on your bench with the thought that C.J. Spiller may get hurt, you could put Fred Jackson in that same offense, there are better options. There are better options out there than Fred Jackson. He's not going to be vulturing goal line touches. He's just simply a stash diaper guy. 12-team league. He's average draft position is about 134, which is round 11, 12. So, but in my opinion, I would avoid this guy, Fred Jackson. I don't know if you got anything to say on him.
I don't have anything to say on him.
All right, this guy here, and I watched him yesterday, and I got to believe that he's going to fall back dramatically after last night's showing. Because he lost, I think he lost at least one fumble, and he didn't look really too good to me. I'm talking about from the Denver Broncos, who's listed at the starting number one running back right now, even though I have him listed at 44 on my list. I'm talking about Ronnie Hillman. He struggles with blitz pickup. He struggles with holding on to the football. Even though he showed some elusiveness around the edge, but he struggles in between the tackles, okay? He's about 200 pounds, give or take, for a running back, a feature back. That's pretty if you don't have 4.3, 4.4 speed that, and you're that small, you won't be an effective running back. Now he's got to contend with the 58th pick from the Denver Broncos in the draft, Monty Ball. And I think in this offense, let me put it through, in this offense, you can pick him up, and I would handcuff him with Monty Ball. Monty Ball is going to eventually be the starting running back. And also remember that that they still have Noshar Moreno. He may play a role in the offense in the backfield. But Ronnie Hillman is a decent, very decent backup to Monty Ball. And you can have him in a 12-team league, round 10. So he's not, but you can grab him and handcuff him because you never know about with Monty Ball. Monty Ball is one of these Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken, he's Wisconsin running back. And there's something about Wisconsin running backs. They're hyped when they come into the league. But they're shaky. They're shaky when they I'm speaking of Ron Dane, and I don't know if anybody heard of Ron Dane before. Ron Dane used to
Ron Dane.
Yes. Was a big running back from Wisconsin, was highly touted coming into the league, and he was a pure BUST, one of the worst four-letter words that you can be coming into the league, and that was a bust. And Monty Ball from Wisconsin also. So the jury's still out for me on Wisconsin backs, but Monty Ball supposedly, in others' opinion, is going to break that stigmatism was on Wisconsin backs. Let's move on to the number 43 rated back, and I'm going to be talking about. He used to play for New England. They decided to move on from Mr. Danny Woodhead, and now he's over in San Diego. He's one of the few role players that have excelled at their niche. He's a hurry up and pass catching specialist. He boasts a career 4.8 yards per carry, and that's a crazy number for a guy that's 5'8" on his tippy toes and a third down back. Even though he gets little yardage after contact, he finds a hole, and believe it or not, people, he's an upgrade over Ronnie Brown and Jackie Battle in San Diego. So I know how well he fared when he was with Tom Brady and the Patriots offense. Now his role is with Philip Rivers as a dump off target in a passing attack that's supposedly not going to take as many deep shots as it did last season. But don't get it twisted, okay? He is a pure bench option. But he's a bench option that you can plug in with a reasonable hope he might get you some points. He's a flex value, and definitely a flex value in PPR leagues, without a doubt. You got anything about Mr. Danny Woodhead?
No, sir. No, sir.
Okay. Let's go to the law firm over in Cincinnati. I think this guy is going to be a bust. He is going to be the starting running back. He is going to be the starting running back in the Cincinnati backfield. But I think this is the... if he's still there, I think this is the Bengals' weakest link in the offense. I'm talking about Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. Last year, he was rated number 19. As a running back, okay? He set career highs in every category but touchdowns. But Cincinnati realized it was a stretch that he was a bell cow type of running back. So that's why they used the 37th overall pick to pick up Giovanni Bernard, who is light years ahead of Ben Jarvis Green Ellis in talent. Now, supposedly, the law firm and Bernard are going to form a committee. But, in my opinion, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is going to be on the downside, the negative side of that committee. That's why I'm saying that this guy, don't expect too much from this guy because he's not a dynamic back. He's more of a plotting back. That's one of the reasons why New England didn't hold on to this guy when they had him. That's one of the reasons why he moved over to Cincinnati because of they had gotten rid of Cedric Benson. And Bernard Scott is often injured. So he basically got that spot by default because there really wasn't anybody else. Well, now there is somebody else. So even though it may be a running back by committee in the beginning, it won't be for long. So Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, number 42 on my list. Don't expect too much from him. His average draft position is 86. 86. Can you believe that?
Dang.
Seventh round, okay? And
a lot
don't
of people
believe
from Ohio are, you know, a little bit deranged. So, I mean, as evidenced by your man that you talked to on Friday, he ain't from there, but he be hanging around in there, so he got a lot of influence on that from that place.
Well, I think he has family there, I think, or his wife has family there. One or the
exactly.
other. Exactly.
Mundo.
Yes. And the fact is he can't stand Ohio State. So I know that for a fact. He told me
I don't know why he can't stand it. They one of the most conservative type of states around.
Yeah, I know. What can I tell you, man? What can I tell you? He's on vacation up until the later part of September. So
For real?
Yeah.
He ain't on
the
show?
Yeah. No. In fact, I'm on vacation too. Since he took a vacation, I'm on vacation. So we're just running reruns right now until he comes back.
Okay. I mean, you should have hit me up. I would have gladly sat in there with you.
Okay.
That ain't no thing. That ain't.
Yeah.
I keep telling you. Write those numbers down and hit me up if you need me or you know.
Not
Facebook
a problem.
Me.
Yeah, you know what? And it was my bad because I didn't even think about it because I wanted to talk about that the subject we talked about briefly yesterday.
Right.
About the stop and frisk. Yeah.
Right.
But all right. Well, I'll keep that in mind when I want to bring something up and be able to voice it on that Friday show.
Okay.
Because I run the board, even when he's there, I run the board, so.
I know you do, but I just can't keep going back and forth with that fool. I can't. It's useless.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I'm backing down or, you know, it's just useless. It's like running around at the between the 5-yard line and the 10-yard line, just running back and forth. What you doing it for?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm, nah, I can't do it.
Trust me, Macal, I understand what you're saying. A lot of times I want to come through the phone and like tell them wake the on up, but I don't know. Hey.
In the words of the infamous and great Doobie Brothers, what a fool believes he sees, a wise man has the power, does not have the power to reason away what it seems to be. That's some crazy stuff, man.
Yep. All right, let me move to number 41 on my hit list here. And we got about 50 minutes left in the show, but if we have to go over time, we'll do it because it's a 2-hour show and we're stretching it. All right, he was the number one high school recruit, and I didn't know this, but he was the number one high school recruit in the country entering college. Bryce Brown fell to the seventh round of the 2012 draft because he never wanted to go to college. He bounced around several schools and had some off-field issues. The talent was there, and he showed up. Showed up when Brown made week 12 to 13 spot starts in place of a concussed LeSean McCoy, shredding the Dallas and Carolina defenses for a combined 347 yards, four touchdowns on 43 yards. Excuse me, 43 carries, which is an 8 point yards per carry. Opponents finally figured out Brown had a tendency to bounce every run outside, and he had ball security issues, which with both of those are definitely true. He fumbled four times thereafter and losing three of them. All right. Now, quite naturally, everybody knows that the Chip Kelly offense versus the Andy Reid's offense is opposite opposite of each other. Chip Kelly is a run-heavy type of offense. Andy Reid is a pass-oriented type of offense. So, this is a definite handcuff in my position, in my opinion, that I would grab Bryce Brown. If you have LeSean McCoy, it is, in my opinion, imperative. You want to be able to take advantage of Chip Kelly type of offense and not that much of a drop-off in talent between LeSean McCoy and Bryce Brown. Grab Bryce Brown in the 10th to 11th round, which is his average draft position, to be handcuffed with LeSean McCoy. I'm not saying LeSean McCoy is injury-prone, but he's a running back. Running backs take a big pounding. Anything can happen. Anything can happen, not even to the number one ranked running back. And it's imperative that you handcuff your main back. Let me put it that way. One of your main backs. So Bryce Brown is a definite handcuff, in my opinion, and it's not that much of a drop off. Just expect that he has fumbling issues. Any questions there? Any comments?
I just got a comment about the Eagles. I took a look at them on their two games.
Mm-hmm.
That offense is gonna be potent. So if they run it a hurry up all the time,
mm-hmm,
they're gonna be potent. It's just gonna be dependent upon that defense. I got questions about their defense. It doesn't look like they hold water. But this is more opportunities for offense that offense creates. It creates, mm-hmm, you know, more trouble as well. So I am very, very annoyed about that first game between the Skins and the Eagles. I am just, like, paranoid now. When I saw, just seeing how Michael, that offense looks like it runs very good with Mike at the helm.
Yep.
Foles doesn't look bad, right? But mm-hmm, it just looks like that joint is almost tailored for Mike. If
mm-hmm
he can get his mind right on there and not, you know, stay away from the injuries, it's gonna be a problem with him. It's gonna be a problem. It's gonna
mm-hmm
be a problem.
Yeah, I said before that Eagleton's going to surprise some people. I'm telling you, and I still say that Mike Vick ain't white washed up. I still say that. I'll say it until he proved me otherwise. I don't think he's washed up. A lot of people will discount him, and especially in fantasy, his draft position in fantasy is way down there, and I think you can make it's a steal if you get Michael Vick. I think the possibility of getting Mike Vick let me put it this way. You can probably get him in the 10th round.
That's a steal, right?
And that's a, in my opinion, that's a huge steal because he can give you a top 10, top 5 quarterback stats, and you can get him in the 10th round. That's crazy. So guaranteed that I'm looking at Mike Vick if he's sitting that way down there. And I haven't picked up a quarterback yet, and he's sitting there for the EV taken. So
right.
Anyway, let's move on to this guy. You know, a lot of promise. This is one of these backs got a lot of promise, and none of it's been fulfilled because he's always getting hurt. And I really don't want to make it this guy, and he's always thought of as highly as a back. And 235, and he's a good back. 4.4 when he's healthy, running, but he can never stay healthy. I'm talking about, let's go down to the great state of Carolina with Jonathan Stewart as my number 40th rated back that is often injured. He's got an ankle injury right now in preseason. And you know, like I said, I'm at a loss for words for this guy because I don't think he's ever going to reach the potential that people had for him when he first came into the league because he can't seem to stay healthy, no matter what. He's got a prime opportunity to take over the running back job full time if he stays healthy and he can display his talent. With D'Angelo Williams back there and Mike Tolbert, he's a better runner, but he can't stay healthy. That's why he's back down here, number 40. And you know what? His average draft position is 106 in a 12-team league. That's in the 8th, 9th round. I wouldn't even take a flyer on this guy because I can't trust him. There's no way I can trust him. I understand that he's got a potential to be a very good back, but potential. Don't give me points. Let me put it that way. And consistent points week in and week out. So I wouldn't even draft this guy, in my opinion. Would not draft him at all. McCown.
Who is this now?
Jonathan Stewart from Carolina.
Oh, yeah, he's been down there for a while. What is this, his 6th or 7th year?
Let's see what how long he's been there. I think it's fourth or fifth year.
That youngin has not come through like he, you know, on his promise. So I wouldn't touch him. I would not touch him at all.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I don't even know why you got him ranked.
Well, I mean, he's got potential, but. In my opinion, I wouldn't. I have him ranked in the 50s, at 40, but I wouldn't draft this guy. I really wouldn't draft him. I wouldn't. I mean, he's just. I can't. He's just a waste of a bench spot, in my opinion. All right, let me move on to this next guy who got drafted along with another running back, and he's number 39 on my hit list. He put UCLA's offense on his back. He rushed for 282 times for over 1,700 yards, which was a 6.1 yard per carry. He had 13 touchdowns and 33 receptions. So he's a fairly versatile back. He ran in the combine at a 4.4, just short of a 4.5. He's 205 and 5'10", He can pass protect, and he's a pretty good runner. Let me put it this way. He was rated the number two tailback based on college tape study before the draft behind only the other back that was drafted by the Green Bay Packers, Eddie Lacy. I'm talking about Jonathan Franklin. Jonathan Franklin is an extremely good back who got into an unfortunate situation because Green Bay also drafted Eddie Lacy from Alabama. And they also have DeJuan Harris, who's a change of pace back, who unofficially or officially is named the number one back in Green Bay. But I think that's going to change. I think DeJuan Harris has gotten hurt. And Eddie Lacy looked very good running the ball in his latest experience. So basically the Green Bay's backfield job is up for grabs, and Lacy is the heavy favorite. But I really like Jonathan Franklin's talent, and I think he's going to be a good back. But he's right now, in my opinion, he's an injury away from starting behind in front of Eddie Lacy. I think if Eddie Lacy gets hurt, then it's Jonathan Franklin. But it's just someone to keep on your radar. I think Jonathan Franklin is like I said, extremely good back. But Eddie Lacy is looks like the definite starter there in a very high-powered offense, even though Green Bay for the first two games has been faring well in the offensive scoring category. So, but I think they're going to be straightening that out come the regular season. Sometimes these teams, a lot of the real good teams, not all of them, but a lot of the real good teams don't put their best product out there. They're just mainly trying to get their guys in shape for the regular season. So you see the bad teams, the teams that had a not too good a record last season, doing well in the preseason. And that's to build the confidence up of the coaching staff and also of the players versus teams that fared well last season. And in the preseason, it looks like they're not doing too much because they know what they have. And they're just trying, like I said, trying to get their guys in shape and not too worried about winning preseason games because they know that when the real games start that they, and I hate to say it like this, they can turn it on because they have the players at different skill levels to do that. So it's good to watch the preseason games, but know what you're watching and who's playing well for what reason. I don't know if you have any comments on that, Mikal, but that's how I see it. And
I'm good. You good? Good.
Okay. Let's move on to one of Mikal's favorite cities. one of Mikal's favorite cities. He's a third round pick out of Temple. Bernard Pierce replaced Ricky Williams as Ray Rice's primary backup and became a significant weekly contributor from week 12 through the playoffs, racking up 555 yards on 105 carries, which is a 5.29 yard per carry over that 10-game stretch. His role increased over 10 carries per game average, coincided with Cameron's firing as offensive coordinator. Quite naturally, everybody who's watched football knows that Cameron got fired, and Jim Caldwell, who was the quarterback's coach at the time, took over as the offensive coordinator. And when that happened, Bernard Pierce, his touches increased. He ran a 4.49, just short of a 4.5 40 at the 2012 combine. He has more, but his game has more to do with vision and downhill decisiveness than speed. He's a solid ball carrier. Now, I'm telling you, people, when I tell you this, you can take this to the bank. This kid is a problem, okay, when he gets on the field. This kid is a problem with opposing defenses when he gets on the field. All right? Ray Rice has got his hands full holding this kid off, okay, as being number one back. Luckily, Ray Rice has got a few years ahead of this kid and established himself. Otherwise, I think this kid could take Ray Rice's job because this kid, like I said, is a problem. He's strong. He's got quicks, and he can do it all. He can do it all. All right? So he can flirt with a running back one value if Ray Rice gets hurt for whatever reason. And I think Ray Rice, and I'll probably say it when I get to him, is falling a little bit. But draft this guy as one of your best handcuffs in your draft, because this kid, if he gets on the field, a la Ben Tate, can be a problem. Your comments?
I totally agree. I like this guy. I like Youngin. Every time they would take Ray Rice out, when I was watching, I was like, I couldn't understand why they taking Ray Rice out, and it was a whole big to do about them running the ball with Rice, but every time they kept putting in number 30, and I was just like, who is this dude? And
mm-hmm.
the dude, Youngin, just kept, he kept producing. He kept getting on the
right.
edge, he kept getting up the hole. He had good
mm-hmm.
speed, burst, I like him. I like him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I like him a lot. I was kind of jealous of him a little bit. I had a jealous of that Youngin.
Yep. Yep, I'm telling you.
And you are absolutely right. If he and Ray Rice came in at the same time, Ray Rice would be up out of there. He would
mm-hmm.
not get on the field.
Mm-hmm.
He would not get on the field. Ray Rice wasn't, the established featured back, and
yep.
they have, they were doing things to preserve him, which I thought was pretty smart, because they wanted him to come on in the latter part of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But what ended up happening, Ray Rice did come on in the latter part of the year, but so did this Youngin. So
yep.
it was really interesting to watch them play. Really interesting to watch them play.
All right, let's move on to another sleeper I got here. This guy, I don't say he's a sleeper, but he drew Jamaal Charles comparison based on his college film coming out of Cincinnati. But his rookie season was decidedly slow. He missed all the OTAs due to rookies from participating in pre-training camp workouts if their schools are on the quarter system, if they haven't graduated or whatever. In addition, Steven Jackson, Isaiah P. fell behind seventh rounder Darrell Richardson and didn't get his first carry until week seven. He rushed five times for 21 yards in his season finale. He's got 4.47 speed. He's highly impressive lateral explosion. But his head wasn't on straight as a first-year pro. Admittedly, he said he had a terrible 2012 season. I don't get it. He's suspended for the first week after violating the league's substance abuse policy. Supposedly, he's still in the mix with Darrell Richardson. But I think this kid's got issues. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. When you come into the league, and it's not the first running back or wide receiver or any position, skilled player, either first or second-year player, trying to establish themselves and do knucklehead, and excuse my language, on a Sunday, knucklehead shit. it boggles my mind, especially you're not established. You're trying to establish yourself. You're trying to put yourself in a good light in front of the coaches, and you do stupid things. You do things to put you off the team rather to keep you on the team. And now he's got a strike against him because he's got to sit out a 1 week for a substance abuse policy suspension. And that's just given Darryl Richardson, and it's this rookie that's coming. Darryl Richardson's a second-year player. The rookie coming in, Zach Stacy, a leg up, even though he's practicing, but it's given him a leg up because he's thought of in a bad light at the coaches. And all it takes in the NFL for someone to have a huge week and a crazy week, and you're an afterthought. And he's out for the first week. So if Darryl Richardson or even Zach Stacy, for that remote thought, gets in the first week and has a stupid week, he's going to be an afterthought. He's going to say, well, we'll give you a shot, but we like what we see from these two guys ahead of you. And we feel we can't trust you because of what you did to hurt the team. Even though, you know, you did it, it hurts. It does overall hurt the team because we drafted you and your ability for a reason. Now you did this stupid shit, and it hurts the team. I don't know how you feel about Isaiah Pete, if you ever heard of the guy or what, but
I never heard of the guy.
Mhm. Yeah, in fact, I he is a Jamaal Charles type of guy. He's got the 197, which is about Jamaal Charles' weight. He's 5'10". Jamaal Charles is 5'10", 5'11", give or take. And he's got blazing speed, 4.47, just like Jamaal Charles. So he's got that, but let me put it this way. My man sitting in KC has got a better head than Isaiah P. does have in St. Louis. So, and that makes a big difference. So, anyway, let's move on to one of my favorite handcuffs of this year, because I think he's going to be used quite a bit this year because of the top five pick most people are going to take. May not warrant a top five pick. This guy, 214, 5'11", out of Auburn. He rotated with Arian Foster in week two to pour 97 yards and two touchdowns on the Jaguar. But his season was all downhill from there. Quite naturally, he needs a Foster injury to become a fantasy starter, but never getting one. It was instead Tate who was battling injuries. The power back suffered a toe ailment in week four and missed week five. He had a hamstring strain in week seven, and that cost him five games, and which was more or less left him ineffective the rest of the way after he came back. He's a very physical downhill runner surprising to others, a shake and bake type of guy. Arian Foster has a calf strain. He also is dealing with back issues. Here's a classic example, people, of a back that is getting 350, 360 carries a year that, in my opinion, is slowly breaking down. But it's still going to be drafted high because he's Arian Foster. If you draft Arian Foster, and I'm pretty sure everybody who has drafted Arian Foster knows this, you better. You absolutely better. This is one of the best handcuffs in all of football for a running back is Ben Tate. Without a doubt, this guy is, in fact, let me put it this way. He was a starting back he would have been the starting back if he hadn't broken his leg and then Arian Foster came on the scene. So this guy has a huge amount of talent, but because Arian Foster exploded, Ben Tate is now the backup. So if Arian Foster starts to break down, Ben Tate will take over and not skip a beat. Talk to me, Macau.
I agree with you. I like Tate. You caught me while I was eating my sandwich, but...
No problem.
I like Ben Tate. I think both of these guys are pretty good, but, you know, of course I got a... I like Arian Foster. I do not want to see that youngin' hurt, or I don't want to see him diminished, his skills diminished, because the youngin' is, you know, he's a true Renaissance man, and you don't get that too much in a football player. You know that youngin' is real sharp. I really like him, and I really like how he plays the game. He's very intelligent. So. But, Ben Tate, you are absolutely right. I haven't seen a game where Ben Tate has not, you know, delivered and when I watched him play. Mm-hmm. I don't see that much difference in their style of play. I mean, in terms of production, but I think you're right on with that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me move on to this guy here. I have him rated number 35. He comes out of that same Big Easy out of New Orleans. I think he's a misfit for New Orleans' pass-based offense. He received more than 7 carries in just one of the first 8 games, and the Saints frequently were playing from behind. From week 7 to week 17, Mark Ingram's role increased, and he got double-digit rushes in 7 of the final 8 contests, racking up 468 yards and 4 touchdowns on 109 carries, which was a little over 4.2 yards per carry. He's not explosive back. He struggles in the pass game. He gets better when he gets the ball more. That's because he's a strong back, and he wears the defense out. A lot of people labeled Ingram a first-round bust, but he hasn't been used the way he should be used. Unfortunately, he went to New Orleans, which is a pass-first offense. True, they're going to run the ball more, but they have a crowded backfield, and they rotate these backs back and forth at willy-nilly. And you never know who's going to be the back that's going to excel from game to game. But given a chance in another offense that features the running back more, I think Mark Ingram can excel what he does best. I know that Sean Payton, like I said before, promises to run the ball more, which is a feather in Mark Ingram's hat if he does, and also because they also trade away Chris Ivory, so it's less crowded, but it's still crowded because you have Pierre Thomas, Mark Ingram, and Darren Sproles. Besides catching the ball, Darren Sproles does run the ball, but he doesn't run the ball often. But he still is a back. He's a back that they rotate in and out. But Mark Ingram, when used effectively, can be an effective back. I still believe that. That's why I have him rated 35. Any comments?
No, sir. Oh, no comments.
Okay. This guy here from another one of your favorite cities. He eked out a roster spot behind Ahmad Bradshaw and David Wilson, but quite naturally was quickly passed by Wilson when Ahmad Bradshaw got hurt in week 2. In weeks 2 to 3, Andre Brown combined for 148 yards and 3 touchdowns on 33 carries, which is 5.58 yards per carry. and earned a change of pace role when Bradshaw returned. He also vultured a handful of goal line touchdowns. He is trusted in the pass protection over David Wilson, but I think that's changing. He gets what's blocked, but his yards per carry average is deceptive. He is a sluggish plotter, he got retained for 1 year, and he's expected to begin with a timeshare with Wilson, which I think is going to probably change. But the Giants do have a timeshare. They've had a timeshare ever since they've had, I think, Tiki Barber and what's the big back that they got rid of? Oh my God, I can't remember his name. Anyway, they Tom Coughlin, I guess, believes in somewhat of a running back by committee, but there's always a feature back and the other back. Yeah, not Bradshaw, before Bradshaw. What was the big back?
Oh, yeah, I know you're talking about. Went to San Francisco. I can't remember his name either.
That is bad. But he was at, toward the end of the time with the Giants, he was pretty bad. It's still going to be a running back by committee, but I think Wilson's going to get the majority of the carries, with Andre Brown being a change of pace and possibly a goal line back. That's why I have him listed as my number 34 back. Comments?
No comments.
Okay. All right. All right, we got this guy that was taken away from the – well, not taken, but was moved to the West.
Brandon Jacobs.
No. Yeah, there you go. Brandon Jacobs. That's it. Absolutely. Brandon Jacobs. All right, this guy, he tore his ACL and he came back to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he was an inconsistent back, all right? He also had problems with his Achilles, and thereafter, Jonathan Dwyer and Isaac Redman took over the running back duties. He's got ideal size, and he used to run, I don't know if he still does, a 4.45. But the Steelers washed their hands of him, and he went to free agency, and the Cardinals picked him up on a one-year deal, $2.5 million. Now he's back with his old offensive coordinator, which is Bruce Arians. He's definitely the clear number one back for the Arizona Cardinals. They're not too happy with Ryan Williams. Excuse me, and Stephon Taylor and Andre Ellington aren't in the mix as the number one. And Bruce Arians is a pass-first coach. He's a good bet to start week one, but I wouldn't expect any fireworks or any kind of explosiveness coming out of the Arizona backfield. Of course, the Arizona offensive line is still in transition and still trying to get its act together, because it was one of the weakest offensive lines in all of football. His average draft position is 86, which is about round 7. He's a flex option, in my opinion, at best. Until he proves something more than he's shown in preseason and the sample we have of him in Pittsburgh last year, Rashad Mendenhall is a bench player. Pick him up late. I wasn't late, but mid draft, mid to late draft, 7th, 8th round, and wait to see how he performs. before you give many type of credence in your on your roster, on your starting roster. Talk to me.
I got nothing.
Okay.
I don't know about him. I don't know about him. And
Rashawn
Mendenhall? You said Rashawn Mendenhall from the from the Steelers? Oh, okay. Well,
He's with the Cardinals now.
Yeah, but I don't know what that offense is going to do with Arians. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's going to do. I mean, you would think that you know Rashawn Mendenhall was he wasn't bad, he wasn't great. You know what I'm saying? You got Fitzgerald, you got Carson Palmer, and you got Arians. I mean, it looks like it's going to be pretty decent out there, but I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to see it, so I'm just reserving that. I don't know if Mendenhall will work out there or not. I don't know. You can go on. Go on. That's
okay.
All
right. This is another back in a crowded backfield. Who is at that magic age of 30, on the wrong side of 30, I should say, that is sharing the backfield with Jonathan Stewart. I'm talking about D'Angelo Williams. Just like you hear me, people, not having too many words, I don't know really what to say about Jonathan Stewart. D'Angelo Williams is still a playmaker, but with inconsistent workloads and production. He's the kind of player that you can steal you a week when he's on and get you a donut when he's off. He's a flex option at best. He'll need the Jonathan Stewart to miss time to be a real fantasy factor. His average draft position is 114, which is in a 12-team draft, is in the 9th, 10th round. He can take a flyer on him. Let me put it this way. The offense in Carolina, Cam Newton supposedly – the way the offense is being built now is that Cam Newton from the first year and part of last year is not going to be as it was. Let me put it that way. The latter half of last year and supposedly what they want to do this year is what Cam Newton and the Carolina offense is going to be, with Cam Newton basically staying in the pocket and throwing from the pocket and doing less running. With that being said, one of these running backs is going to pick up the slack, whether it's D'Angelo Williams or, if he's healthy, a Jonathan Stewart. I have to bet on D'Angelo Williams because Jonathan Stewart can't stay healthy, and Mike Tolbert is not a real dynamic back. So with that being said, you may catch lightning in a bottle because D'Angelo Williams may be the more effective back as long as Jonathan Stewart remains unhealthy. So it's worth taking a flyer on him in the 9th and 10th round. But it's just a flyer. It's no guarantee. You have to wait and see how the Carolina offense shakes out before you can trust D'Angelo Williams or a healthy Jonathan Stewart. Talk to me.
He's spot on again. Both of those dudes, I mean, it seemed like it was yesterday that everybody was all celebrating the contract that both of those dudes got, and they were supposed to be thunder and lightning. And
Right.
And it's like they whatever, and it's like it's just Cam and Steve Smith down there. So, I mean, I don't know, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if I would even take a flyer on either of those guys.
All right, let's move on to number 31, all right? This guy, Aaron Hernandez is gone. Rob Gronkowski, with all intents and purposes, probably won't be there for the first week or whatever weeks before he comes back. Danny Woodhead, Mr. Change of Pace, Mr. Dump-Off that Tom Brady always throws to and seems to get the yardage, is gone. Wes Welker is gone, okay? This running back, and he's listed as a running back, but I think he's going to be taking over Danny Woodhead's role as a whatever they need him as, lining up as a tight end, lining him as a change of pace back. Talking about Shane Vereen. I got him number 31, but this guy is going to be used in a lot of ways because Danny Woodhead, like I said, Danny Woodhead is not there. And Shane Vereen is smooth and nifty in the passing game and has big play talent as a ball carrier. So with that being said, he's going to take over the pass down back job. And I think that he also can be used as a receiver, where he's been taking snaps as a receiver. And if you were watching, I think it was yesterday, the last New England game, he caught a nice, very nice pass in the end zone from Tom Brady, over-the-shoulder catch. So Shane Vereen is going to be especially in PPR, I think he's going to be a sleeper back that you can get in the ninth round, and get decent value, especially if you have a flex on your roster in fantasy, and it's a PPR. This is a good guy to get, and you get him in the seventh and eighth round, and you may be getting very good value for that. Talk to me, man.
I got nothing.
Okay. No problem. We'll move on to my number 30. Number 30, starting back for the St. Louis Cardinals, seventh-round rookie, showed well as a change of pace back out playing the second rounder, like I said before, Isaiah Pede. He was phased out down the stretch with just 16 of 94 carries coming after week 12. He averaged 4.8 yards per carry. He flashed speed around the edge. He even showed some wiggle between the tackles. He just didn't display any special qualities. He's 5'10", 195 pounds, and the competition in St. Louis is wide open. But all indications are saying that Darrell Richardson will be the featured back, the number one back, even though if it's a committee, he'll be getting the majority, I would say 65-35 in a ratio, a percentage of touches. It should be a nice flex value in PPR regardless of his role, and he should be a viable standard league option unless he plays his way into plays into the starting job, then I see him maybe moving up on my board. But right now he's number 30, and he's listed, okay? Unless things change, he's listed as a starting running back. Darrell Richardson, St. Louis Cardinals running back. Talk to me, man.
St. Louis Cardinals.
St. Louis Rams. Damn. St. Louis Rams. I'm dating myself. Damn. Did I say that? Damn. Okay.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I wasn't saying it to correct you. I was saying it because I was thinking. I was like, St. Louis Cardinals. And then when you said it again, I was like, oh, damn. It's St. Louis Rams.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I don't know too much about this cat. I would have to do some. I just don't know. I don't know. You said he came out from the seventh round, and you never know. You know, I would have to see it. I would have to see it before you even take a flyer on him. And I haven't seen him.
Okay. All right. This next back, he's listed number 29. with an asterisk. Let me put it that way. 29 with an asterisk, because he can easily fall from where he's at. He did his thing averaging 4.6 yards per carry while rolling up a little over 1,000 yards on the ground. And he had 245 with six touchdowns total. But doing his thing, he battled through neck and knee ailments, and he habitually has had a foot problem, which he had to go through a right foot operation to replace a smaller screw with a larger one. I'm talking about Ahmad Bradshaw, who left the New York Giants and went to the Indianapolis Colts and is supposedly going to lead the rushing attack of the Indianapolis Colts, who had one of the weakest in the league last year. He's got good hands. He's got good nose for the goal line. And he's a nasty guy in pass protection, meaning he's got a mean streak in pass protection. But it's a good bet that he going to have issues with health, because that's just his thing. He may play through some of it, but I got to believe that even if he starts playing the beginning of the season, if he doesn't land on the pup list, that he's going to get hurt, because history tells us he gets hurt during the season, and that Vic Ballard will take over the duties. So draft him with caution. He's 87 on the average draft position, which would put him in the seventh, eighth round. But don't expect too much out of him. In my opinion, even though I have him rated higher because he's going to start off more likely the starting running back, I like Vic Ballard more than I like Ahmad Bradshaw, but that's just me.
You're not by yourself. You're not by yourself. I do not like this dude. If me and this dude walked into a bar, I guarantee you we would be fighting. We would be fighting. I do like his passion for the game, because he plays the game, you know, with an old school mentality or whatever. Yeah, he does stay hurt. I wouldn't draft him. I definitely wouldn't draft him.
Mm-hmm. All right, this next guy, they've been talking this guy up a lot, talking this guy up a whole bunch. He earned the Doak Walker Award as the nation's top backfield ball, top back, I shouldn't say. He broke Barry Sanders' NCAA record for career touchdowns, while topping 1,800 yards for the second straight year. He was a collegiate workhorse. Now, check this out. Monty Ball amassed 924 carries at Wisconsin. 924 carries in college.
Goodness gracious.
924 carries in college. He doesn't have elite speed. He's got 4.46 speed. He's 5'10", 214 pounds. He's a no-nonsense north-south runner with a one-cut-and-go style. They drafted him, meaning the Denver Broncos, with the 58th pick, and immediately adjusted their offense to suit him, implementing a one-cut zone run scheme. All right? So John Elway compared him to Terrell Davis. Right now, Ronnie Hillman, like I had talked about Ronnie Hillman previously when I ranked him 44 on my list, is number one on the depth chart, but Monty Ball will get every opportunity to impress John Fox, who's not real big on rookies, and to go ahead of Ronnie Hillman, who who's really a change of pace type of back, and the only other threat to start ahead of Monty Ball. But I like this kid. He showed me a little bit yesterday when I watched him play. I still want to see more. Hopefully they'll play him a little more in the third preseason game. And I get a better feel. And this guy may move up my board right now. He's number 28. He may move up my board to get into at least the top 25. But Monty Ball, soon to be, in my opinion, soon to be the starting running back for a very potent offense, the Denver Broncos.
What college is he from again? Is he from Alabama?
Nope. What I tell you before, man, about those backs, Ron Dane, he's from Wisconsin.
Oh, he's from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I need to see him. I need to see him because I heard some other hullabaloo about this young man. Denver seems to be a little bit excited about him. What round did they draft him in?
58th. That would be
third round.
Second round. 58th.
Second round.
Yeah, that would be the second round. Sure. Second round.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know. I want to see him. I want to see how they use him. I mean, but you know, a north south guy is, you know, with Peyton Manning is pretty good. Although I don't know about his pass catching. Did you speak about his pass catching?
His pass catching, he still needs to refine that. He's not a decent pass catcher.
So he's just a
protector.
Runner. He's just a straight runner and a good protector because he's a big body. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good for Peyton. It's not bad. I mean, it's only a dual threat at the line, but you don't need a running back to do but so much with Peyton Manning back there, except for pass, protect, and run. So,
right.
But it's a plus if you can pass, protect, run, and catch.
Right.
That's just the ultimate, but. It's enough for Peyton Manning, you know. It's enough. If he can get his big body in there, and if they're going to go to a zone scheme, I don't know how that's going to work with a quarterback like Peyton, because you got a pass block, and if you run in that zone scheme, they don't pass block well with a zone scheme type of talent that you need in there to run that zone scheme. But I don't know. I don't get paid the money, so. I'm still learning and figuring it out, but I from what you're telling me and from what I'm hearing, he sounds like I'm gonna check him out.
Okay, all right, we got a little more than a minute left in the show for regular time. We're gonna be running overtime because I'm gonna finish all up with these backs. And give you some other backs that you may want to take a look at also that are off my top 50. Tune in next week. For those who won't stick around, who just will listen to the archives whenever it's convenient for them, with the master plan, I do believe next week we'll be in a live draft. Okay, we'll be doing a whole live draft on Sunday. One of the leagues that Vic and I are in, so Vic will be here, and also probably Ricky and whoever else joins in. And we'll be conducting an actual live draft on this show. The show will still start at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. As always, this is JT, a.k.a. The Master, and this is The Master Plan. And we are in overtime as we speak. All right, let me go to the number 27, who I'm really looking forward to this guy. I really like this guy. He took over the lead running back duties from Trent Richardson at Alabama, and paced the national champs in carries with 204 yards and carries with 204, and he had 1,300 yards and 17 touchdowns. The problem with him. He's got shaky hands, which he needs to improve on, and he also needs to improve his pass protection. But he's a punishing runner. He finishes well. He's light on his feet, and he's got lateral agility, and quite naturally he can make defenders miss. The best comparison in the NFL is a Jerome Bettis. They took this guy. The Green Bay Packers drafted two running backs. I talked to you already about Jonathan Franklin, who I had ranked number 39. This guy, number 27, Eddie Lacy, he was drafted ahead of Jonathan Franklin. He is a powerful running back who I'm really looking forward to being the lead back in the Green Bay powerful offense. And this is a classic case of the Green Bay not doing too much, just doing enough, but not doing too much in the preseason. But Eddie Lacy's gotten some touches in this past preseason game, and I like what I see. They have DeJuan Harris, who was there last year, listed as a number one back. That's not going to happen long, friends. Before the preseason is over, Eddie Lacy is going to be the number one back if he isn't already. And supposedly Green Bay is going to run the ball more. And when they run the ball, Eddie Lacy is going to be the first man on the block. And I really like Eddie Lacy. I got him ranked number 27. But there's a strong possibility with the type of offense, and they spread the defense around, meaning Green Bay, they spread the defense with their passing game, that Eddie Lacy could be in the top 10 in running. I really like this kid, and hopefully he stays on the field on a consistent basis and is able to display his talent. Talk to me, Macau.
I like the potential for this young man. There's only one thing that concerns me with him is his ability to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of things on him already.
Mm-hmm.
However, him going to the Green Bay, they won't need him to be a workhorse back. They won't need him to do that. I mean, he's the mold to be a workhorse back, but they won't need him to do that. They will just need him every now and again to shoulder, you know, a lot of the runs, and he's very capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a positive for him because he's got so many things. He's got
mm-hmm.
so many things. So I like him as well. I would still keep a light asterisk on him. He is injury prone, but I do like him. I definitely do like him, and I like what Green Bay could possibly do with him.
Okay. All right. This next guy was the single disappointment of 2012 fantasy season, and this is exactly what I was talking about. And I didn't like this guy last year. They ranked him up. I think they had him up in the top 10, which I thought was a joke last year. And when this guy came out along with Jarvis Best, I said on several shows that Jarvis Best would have a better year than Ryan Matthews, and it proved it out. Even though Jarvis Best is no longer playing football, the season I said that, Jarvis Best was a better player over Ryan Matthews. He retains top-notch talent, but his confidence may be shot. He didn't run with purpose most of last year. And the Chargers re-signed Ronnie Brown and added Danny Woodhead to handle passing down snaps. So that's really reducing Ryan Matthews to a two-down player. And the offensive line is still abysmal. So I have him ranked number 26.
But Ryan Matthews,
I would just put him on your bench for now and see how that San Diego offense plays out. But he's not a player, in my opinion, to be really trusted because of his injury history. McCow.
Yes, sir. Ryan who?
Ryan Matthews.
Oh man. I don't know, man. This guy has I'm gonna leave him alone. Because I've been taking shots at so many folks. I don't know with him. I really don't know. I really don't. That's all I got for him.
All right. This guy, my next guy, I think he's gonna be top 10. Rookie. Top 10. In rushing. He led the Big Ten in rushing and the nation in carries, amassing 793 yards, 1,793 yards and 12 touchdowns on 382 attempts. His best strength is in the passing game. He's big enough to stone linebackers and lighter ends in pass protection. He also caught 67 passes over his final two college seasons. He ran a 4.6 at the combine, and for a 6.1 and a 230-pound back, that's pretty good. He's not going to be a big play runner, but he's built like a true workhorse and offers impressive versatility. Pittsburgh Steelers picked this guy up with the 48th overall pick, making him the second running back drafted behind Gio Bernard and ahead of Monty Ball and Eddie Lacy. So what I'm saying to you is this. Le'Veon Bell is going to be playing as the number one back. I think he's going to beat out Jonathan Dwyer and Isaac Redman and the Pittsburgh Steelers and in a Todd Haley offense. And with the head coach wanting to run the ball more, I think Pittsburgh is going to run the heck out of this kid and use him in a short passing game. So I really like Le'Veon Bell. Talk to me.
I haven't seen this young man, but the Steelers. The Steelers are known for, you know, picking up good guys or what have you. Especially, well, they've been hit and miss with, you know, their latest round of running back since Bettis. I mean, Mendenhall was pretty decent, and they had a couple of other guys. But I don't know. I've got to see this guy. I haven't seen it.
Okay. All right, we'll move on to, we'll stay in the same division. Different team. As a redshirt sophomore at UNC, he racked up 1,228 yards and 12 touchdowns on 184 carries, which is a 6.7 yards per carry. He's terrific in the receiving game. He added 92 receptions, 92 career receptions in only two seasons. Giovanni Bernard is lightning quick cutter with 4.5 speed and a compact build that stays low to the ground. 206 pounds and 5'9". He offers the tacklers a minimal strike zone. On college tape, he was every bit as physical as you could possibly see. He lacks power and toughness when faced with oncoming contact. He's basically a finesse back. Which would remind you probably of a Brian Westbrook in some ways, and a Ryan Matthews, hopefully not in being able to be durable, but a Ryan Matthews and others. The Bengals drafted him 37th overall, pairing him with Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, and I got to believe that. That right now they see him as a 10 to 15 carry guy, but I would think that the Bengals would have a much bigger role in mind for this guy. So far, it wouldn't be surprised me if he ran circles around around the law firm, which I think he can do. And with that being said, if he does that, he's going to be earning a bigger piece of the pie in the backfield, out of the backfield in Cincinnati. Giovanni Bernard, number 24 on my hit list.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear if you said anything after that. But yeah, I agree with you. The law firm is he's more of a utility back. You know, he's not your every down type back. This guy can run the ball consistently, and he'll definitely take over for the law firm. He'll definitely run circles around him. I don't think that would be too much of an order, you know. The law firm he's a respectable guy. He's a respectable back, but I don't think he's that either that workhorse or that game changing type back. If this guy can do one of those things, you know, in addition to his versatility, then he'll definitely be a starter. And he'll be a definitely good pickup. I don't know if I would come out the gate and draft him. Maybe pick him up later on in the season, after two or three games or whatever, and take a look at him or something. But with all the pub on the Bengals this year, I kind of would shy away from their players unless they're there and their availability is there. You know? Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's move on to number 23. This guy from another one of your favorite cities. for the first 13 games of his rookie season in 2011, DeMarco Murray looked nothing like the player who had been worn down by injuries and heavy workloads by the end of his four-year career at Oklahoma. Then he stirred echoes of his pre-draft red flags by breaking his ankle in week 14. Now we can move to 2012, where he averaged a good but not great 4.4 yards on his first 75 carries before suffering a mysterious foot injury in week 6. By the time he finally returned in week 13, he again resembled the heavy-footed runner he was when he wrapped up his Sooner days, posting a 3.9 yards per carry over 86 carries. Now he's got a new backup in Lance Dunbar or fifth-rounder Joseph Rander. But his starting job remains unchallenged despite his injury problems. Now, I gotta believe he will get hurt again. But no reason to believe he won't be a massive part of the Cowboys offense whenever he's able to take the field. Now, he's a high risk, high reward running back too. But if you were to draft DeMarco Murray, I would use that as a handcuff to him. If you had DeMarco Murray and you wanted to handcuff him with one of the two players I named, Lance Dunbar or Joseph Randall. I would go with Joseph Randall. When I looked at Joseph Randall running, I liked him better than I saw Lance Dunbar. And it's almost like a guarantee that DeMarco Murray will get nicked up somewhere and miss some games. DeMarco Murray, number 23 on my hit list from one of your favorite cities in Dallas. Talk to me.
Overrated.
Yes.
Overrated. Um, th- th- definitely the young man has some skills, but, you know, he's injury prone, man. He's injury prone. And then the Cowboys act like they're allergic to the running game. I don't know what. I have no idea what's wrong with them. They need, that team needs a running game like a human being needs oxygen. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I just don't understand why they're shucking and jiving trying to, you know, get a good running back in there. You know, I just don't understand it. I really don't understand it. I would not draft this guy. I probably wouldn't even take a flyer. Call me a Homer McFanboy, but anytime that we're looking to play him, we are not intimidated at all. You know, I'm more so intimidated by LeSean McCoy and even Ahmad Bradshaw. But this guy, no, not intimidated by him. Even though, you know, he played pretty well, you know, the couple times that he did play us, but No. No.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next guy on my hit list here. Number 23. Sorry about that. This guy, another back out of New Orleans. Despite a reduction in rushing attempts, he was on pace for more catches, receiving yards, and offensive touchdowns than his breakout season in 2011. Before he fractured his hand in early November. He missed three games and finished as the number 22 fantasy back a year after ranking in the top 10. Darren Sproles remains a dynamic receiver with explosive perimeter running skills, and he's an ideal fit for New Orleans' pass-based offense. And he's listed as a running back, but scores like a wide receiver two or three. Now Sean Payton's back from suspension, and he promised to reinvigorate the running game, leaning on more outside runs from Sproles and inside runs from Pierre Thomas and Mark Ingram. Now Sproles is 30 years old, but shows no signs of fading and doesn't absorb the same kind of punishment normal running backs do. He only had 384 career carries. All right. Arian Foster had 351 last year alone.
Okay.
He is a running back one with upside in the PPR league, and is a reliable flex running back two in standard leagues. Darren Sproles is a huge value pick. Darren Sproles out of New Orleans. Talk to me, Macau.
What did he do last year? What happened to him last year? Was he hurt last year?
Well, he broke his hand. He broke his hand. Like I said, he broke his hand in early November, and he missed three games. So, quite naturally, when you miss that much time, his point value fell off.
Right. I mean, I definitely would draft him in the fourth or fifth round if he's there. If someone else isn't there, you know, or a big league and guys are very much more keen, if you will. So definitely, he's a value pick in the fourth or fifth round. I couldn't see not passing him up if there aren't any. Because when I'm in the fantasy league, I like to assess the people that I'm
you know, that I'm going against, and mm-hmm. see what thinking is. If I'm with some folks that are, you know, pretty sharp or whatever, I'm going to go after a guy like Sproles. I'm going to go after him and have him as my flex. He's reliable in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to catch a lot of balls this year. They are going to throw to him a lot. He's going to be set up for that those big chunks of yards, you know, that big play capability type of back.
Mm-hmm.
So and like you said, yeah, he doesn't run the ball that much. He's not a workhorse back.
No,
that's not his niche. And I don't understand why, you know, I don't understand why some of those folks have a problem with drafting him. I definitely wouldn't. I wouldn't have
mm-hmm.
a problem with him at all.
Same here. All right, this next guy, I have him listed as number 22, but he can easily be top 10, top 5, depending on how things fall out in the Motor City. He left from New Orleans, played in Miami. And after assembling his rushing bonafides in Miami, Bush will look to reestablish his passing game chops in the Lions' high-octane offense. Now, George Bell caught 56 passes from Matt Stafford last season. Jim Schwartz has predicted Reggie Bush could tally as many 80 receptions, which isn't a big stretch out of when you imagine that, like I said, George Bell catching 52. And with the added factor that Reggie Bush is a better runner, as long as Detroit is able to establish a running game, I would think he's a dark horse running back that could be a running back one in PPR leagues. And I'm talking about PPR. Quite naturally, his ceiling isn't as high in standard leagues, but there's nothing stopping Bush from remaining a top back like he was the past 2 years at South Beach. Talk to me, man. Reggie Bush
is going to have a great season this year. I really believe so. They need a guy like him to take the pressure off of Stafford and Megatron, and he's perfect. I think he's perfect. I don't know if he's let go of that whole I want to be a workhorse in between the tackles type of running back. I don't have a problem with that, but I think he's one of the top versatile backs that are out there.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Mm-hmm. He's one of the top ones. I don't think he's in the ilk of Marshall Faulk, but I don't think you want to, you know, be in his presence and tell him that. I don't think
mm-hmm.
you want to tell him something like that. But
mm-hmm.
he definitely has that ability to give a defense fits, and he's perfect for what Detroit needs because. You know, other than Megatron, they don't have another guy out there that can dictate to a defense what they're going to do. So, with those three guys, I expect them to be significantly better. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course, it is Detroit.
All right, this guy, I got him as a sleeper, and it doesn't because this is my former team. This guy made a habit out of being one of the league's most underutilized backs. He was arguably the Saints' most talented runner, but was nevertheless stashed at fourth on the depth chart and didn't play a single snap before November. He averaged 5.4 yards on 40 carries, bringing his career yard per carry to 5.1, but remain the forgotten man in New Orleans. Not that if Not that his talent went unnoticed. Chris Ivory was acquired by the Jets for a fourth-round pick, which is more than they paid for Santonio Holmes in 2010. The stage is set for Ivory, Chris Ivory, to be Fantasy's latest, greatest feature back this season. The Jets are saying they're going to go back to definitely ground and pound. It doesn't have to do with the Jets, but they have a decent offensive line. Chris Ivory is a ferocious runner with the horsepower of a semi, but the torque of a Corvette. He breaks tackles. He rumbles into the end zone with regularity. He has a history of lower body injuries, and he has barely practiced in camp, but he did play yesterday. Every year there's a gang of runners that make the leap from real-life obscurity to fantasy glory. Chris Ivory has the talent and the role to lead the back through pack this season as long as his body cooperates. And that's the key. That's the key with this kid. This guy is a very violent runner. I liked him. I couldn't understand why New Orleans, when they got this guy, weren't using him more often or didn't feature him as a back. They were constantly rotating Pierre Thomas, Mark Ingram, and Chris Ivory in and out, and you never knew who was going to get the most carries and who was going to be more the most consistent because they were in and out so much. I really like this kid, Chris Ivory. He's going into an ideal environment with the Jets, which is a run-heavy offense. And I think this kid can really have a breakthrough season. Chris Ivory, New York Jets, talk to me.
You actually give it props to somebody from the New York Jets.
See that? I'm not hating everything about the Jets. I call him like I see him. And I like this kid. I really like this kid. I was pissed off that they didn't use him more in New Orleans.
I need to take a look at it. I haven't seen too much of him to really comment. I'm pretty much going off of it. He's with the Jets and. I read somewhere that they may start Sanchez a default.
Well, they're going to run the ball more anyway.
So it's who's his competition?
Bilal Powell, Joe McKnight. No competition.
Right. I don't know who those guys are. I don't know. I have to see it. I have to see what's going to happen. They're definitely going to have to run the ball because they're not going to be able to throw too much.
No. Nope. All right. This other guy. Now we're going to number 20. And this guy, I have to have him up there because sooner or later maybe this guy will finally stay healthy for a period of time, for most of the year. He struggled in Greg Knapp's zone blocking scheme, and he's a power runner. Okay? Now, he was behind Oakland's Horrible offensive line. And in week nine, he had a high ankle sprain.
But it didn't really matter because he was struggling because of the offensive run scheme,
which was his own blocking scheme, and he didn't fit that. He fit the power running scheme. So Greg Knapp is gone, and the power blocking is back in. Now we're going to find out, will that be enough to reverse the fortunes of Darren McFadden, who averaged fewer yards per carry than Alex Green, Isaac Redman, and Michael Turner last season, who gained 9.1% of his yards on one carry. Anything is possible, but Run DMC seasons tend to have one true outcome: disappointment.
He lacks patience and smarts for a zone blocking scheme. So it's good news that the power blocking is back. But even if he rediscovers success in his preferred system, will be just a matter of time before some sort of injury holds him back. He's a low end running back too. Now he can flash running back one skills, and then he can also go all the way down to running back three or four low. So he's just like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. That's Run DMC, Darren McFadden. Number
20 on my hit list. Run DMC. My man said the characteristic in Run DMC's performance is disappointment. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow. He is definitely not a guy that I will pick up. He's up, he's down. You don't know if he's in or out or what's going to happen, if he's going to stay healthy or not. He's got all his promise. I've seen a couple of flashes of him, you know, doing some things, but I will stay away from him.
This guy is a sleeper, in my opinion, and I think this guy is going to, one of these guys that's going to burst on the scene. Fourth round rookie out of Miami from the U, was reduced to a third string behind Reggie Bush and Daniel Thomas because he couldn't pick up the playbook and couldn't pass protect well. He flashed exciting acceleration on his change of pace carries, and his role never increased because of coaching staff didn't trust him. He's a straight-line-ish runner with one-cut zone runner capability of hitting home runs with 4.4 long speed. Now, Reggie Bush is at Detroit, and Daniel Thomas, even though there's raves that Daniel Thomas has improved his play, in my opinion, still stinks. So the Finns' lone notable running back addition, is the fifth round rookie Mike Gillisley, which flashed some decent things. I watched him play too, and he wasn't that bad. But essentially, Lamar Miller is going to be the workhorse back. And I like what he's displaying in his running back duties in Miami. But his potential is there. If he lives up to his potential, he can be a dynamite running back. Lamar Miller from the U.
Lamar Miller. I don't know. He does have a lot of potential. I don't know. I would probably stay away from him. Hello?
Okay. Yeah, I hear you. Okay. All right. Now, this next guy had a heavy workload, and I don't know exactly what it was, but I know he had a heavy workload. And he led the league in rushing in 2011. All right. He staged a 38-day holdout. At extending his contract beyond 2013 last year, and it didn't work. He started the season in week three with a 177-yard outburst against the Colts. And he never topped 77 yards on the ground before he got a lisfranc fracture in week seven. And that was the first big sign of breaking down for a back who's not that big. He's only 5'7". Even he's 208. Who racked up a massive workload from 2009 to 2011. I'm talking about Maurice Jones-Drew. They have a new coach. They have a new GM. They're building, rebuilding the team. And he's 28 years old. He racked up an overabundance of carries. But MJD has a habit of defying the odds. But he's playing in a terrible offense, coming off a major injury. And I don't think he's a running back one anymore. And he's got to prove that that he's got some value. I got him ranked number 18. Maurice Jones-Drew. Talk to me, my man.
Maurice Jones-Drew is, you know, I really feel bad for him. I really do. If he doesn't get out of Jacksonville, man, he will never really get to taste what winning is like, you know, because they suck. They really absolutely suck down there. I like Maurice Jones-Drew. It's unfortunate he got hurt. I was definitely behind him with that whole holdout thing. Because it made sense. I mean, he had put in the work, and you know, the shelf life for a running back is, you know, it's not that long, so you can't really expect a running back like that to, you know, to sit back and be like, yo, you got, you know, I'm just gonna honor this contract. No, you need to pay me. You need to pay me because the NFL has no problem in releasing you if you don't produce. They got no problem with that, but. It's really strange to me that people kind of look or frown at a guy who says, you know what, I outproduced my contract, this contract that I'm in, and I want an upgrade. I don't understand why people have a problem with that. You know, I don't understand that. I really don't. I think he'll bounce back again this year because. What is that wide receiver down there? Didn't he get like a 4-game suspension? The youngin.
Oh yeah, you're talking about Justin Blackman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he get suspended?
Yeah, four games.
He's gonna be out 4 games. Mm-hmm. Jones-Drew is all they got, you know, and then they got that young guy's potential. Their quarterback play. I don't even know why they even debating between Gabbert and Henny. I really don't. Gabbert just sucks, and Henny is I would say he's like a C minus NFL quarterback. You know what I mean? But you know, between him and Gabbert, I mean, it's not even a comparison. It's not even a comparison. So. I would take Jones-Drew. I definitely would take Jones-Drew. I would not even hesitate to take him. But this would be the last year that I would feel that way for him.
Yes,
because he's getting up there in age.
Yeah, you know, every draft I've been in for years, and Jones-Drew has been drafted and been draftable. I've never drafted Maurice Jones-Drew in any draft.
Wow.
Never had him on my roster. I've never even tried to trade for him. Never had him on my roster. I just
wow.
he's just one of those I'm not too keen on. For whatever reason. Anyway, let's move on to another city that you really don't really enjoy.
We get a lot of those.
Admission. Yeah, I know that. By his own admission. David Wilson would open the season in a timeshare with Andre Brown, but he's still the prohibitive favorite to lead the G-men in touches. He's going to need to improve. He's made strides in ball security and especially in pass protection in camp. Although there's some potential for bust, the bottom odds are much higher, and his ball protection skills have improved immensely. I think that David Wilson is another one of these guys that can be within the top ten. Given the opportunity and the trust of the head coach that he's a consistent good runner to give the ball to and will be a better pass protector than most people think. I like David Wilson a lot, and I expect him to make a big impact for the Giants and also for fantasy. Talk to me, man.
Who is it now?
David Wilson from the New York Giants.
David Wilson. Oh, man. With Amar Bradshaw gone, and who's the other guy that, that we were talking about earlier for the Giants?
Andre Brown.
I think David Wilson is more of a better pick between him and between those two. Look for him to pretty much take it over. Coughlin, he does like to run the ball, and he's gonna definitely need some big production from this guy. So I would definitely take a look at him the first 3 to 4 weeks. Me personally, I would like to see if he can handle that load. All to himself, but I would have reservations about picking him up, but all the signs are there. All the signs are there to have a good year running.
All right, this next guy, I don't know if the jury's still out on this, or maybe a few people have lost their faith in him. I haven't. In fact, I think he's going to have, I would say, a comeback year, but I think he's going to have a pretty substantial year compared to last year. He's one of those backs that ran for 2,000 yards, and the following year, he dropped off and had a lousy year. Well, he's out of excuses. The Titans are fortifying the line. They've got a left guard. They signed a huge contract with Andre Levitre. He's getting $47 million now. They used the number 10 overall pick on a right guard. Chance Warmack. So CJ 2K has long blamed anyone but himself for his increasingly regular subpar efforts, but fantasy owners shouldn't listen if he does it again in 2013. There are fewer bigger headaches in fantasy sports, but the facts are the facts. Chris Johnson has cleared 1,000 yards in five straight seasons while missing just one game. He'll drive you crazy, but that doesn't mean he's still not a legitimate running back two or a low-end running back one. Chris Johnson, number 16 on my list.
Definitely a draftable guy. I don't know what happened to him last year. I really don't. But I look for him to get back. Last couple years he's been talking about it a lot. I'm going to get back. I'm going to be that guy. This and that. And looking at him against the Skins and that move he put on that rookie. Mind you, that's a rookie, but it still was a hell of a move.
He looks good.
He looks rejuvenated. How old is he now? 29, 30?
Chris Johnson is, I'll tell you in a minute, 28.
Yeah, 28.
He's 27 next month, about this time he'll be 28.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And he's been in the league, what, 6 years now? 7 years?
I think it's six years.
Look for him. I would go with him maybe two more seasons. If he has a monster season this year, I would not draft him next year.
I wonder why, man. It sounds like you're listening to what I'm saying. But that's okay.
I don't disagree with you. It's just part of. Like, it's just one part of what you're saying is misplayed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
I think it has more to do with
you know, the amount of years that they've been running.
You're talking about the cumulative effect. Is that what you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's more, you know, if a guy has been ran like 900 carries and he's coming into what is fourth or fifth year, you know, it's a possible. And the last year he had like a his biggest output. I would be more inclined to agree with what you're talking about.
If
he's only been in like 1 year and he had like my man Alfred and he had like, you know, just bust on the scene. He still got some mileage to go.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, this next guy, just like Steven Jackson, more people seem to question Frank Gore's age and increasing mileage than the better he seems to play. 2012 was no exception when Gore rushed for his most yards since 2006, which was 1,214 yards, while posting his third highest yards per carry, which is 4.7. Despite the fact that Pro Football Focus Gore faced eight-man fronts a whopping 42% of the time, nearly double the league average. Wow, I didn't know that. He seemed to wear down late in the regular season, but came alive in the playoffs. Mr. Harbaugh was running him back and forth and limiting his touches near the end of the season to keep him strong in the playoff run. So they would like to reduce Gore's workload, but sometimes both your number two running back, Kendall Hunter, and number one wide receiver recovering from torn Achilles, throwing your number three runner, which is Marcus Lattimore. Your number three runner, which would be Michael James, I think it is. And your number four running back, Marcus Lattimore, is supposed to spend a year on the NFL list. He's not playing this year. He's going to be carrying the ball, just like he carried it every year. If there's a drop off this season, it will be slim. He's an ideal running back two, and he still can serve as a running back one in a pinch. This is one of the most consistent, steadiest running backs in fantasy and in football. Frank Gore, number 15 on my hit list.
This guy, he just will not stop.
From the U.
Huh?
From the U.
Yeah, exactly. The U. This guy, I mean, what is he in his, what, like 10th season or something?
You know what? That's a good question. He is, how old is he? He is 30 years old. Wow.
Yeah.
He's 30 years old. So I would say he's probably up there, 8-9 years old.
He's got to be a little more than that. He played college with Clinton Portis.
They're
in the same backfield. It was him. I mean, all those guys was together. Clinton, Gore, Sean Taylor, Santana Moss. They all played the same time. That dude has been around. I don't know if I could take Gore this year. I really don't. I mean, them year it's been a long time. But you know, I felt like that last year. So what do I know?
Okay, we got about 10 minutes left before we get cut off here, so I know that. So I'm going to try to run through these as quick as possible.
All right.
The next back, number 14, he hails out of Chicago. He's got a new coach that pledged to get more involved in the passing game. He's going to remain one of the centerpieces of the offense, which should be more unpredictable because of Mark Trestman and his type of offense, which is the West Coast offense. Real quick, not real quickly, but number 14 on my hit list, Mr. Matt Forte.
Wouldn't pick him. Wouldn't pick him. I need to see what this offense is going to be like.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. This next guy, few 1,263-yard, 12 touchdown seasons ever record, much consternation. Thanks to Bill Belichick's reputation as the new Mike Shanahan when it comes to running backs. Fantasy owners seem to focus more on what really didn't do than what he did do in 2012. Now, he did have some fumbling issues and didn't catch many passes. He only caught six, to be exact, last year. But he still came in eighth in rushing with 1,263 yards, like I said. And he scored 12 touchdowns. That was more than the likes of Ray Rice, Chris Johnson, Frank Gore, and Matt Forte, just to name a few, and the most by a Patriot since Corey Dillon. They're going to be running the ball more. I can see that. Shane Vereen's going to, we talked about him earlier, is going to be the playmaking third down back. So, Stephen Ridley, number 14 on my hit list. Talk to me.
Who does he play with?
No, Stephen Ridley, number 13. He plays with New England.
Ooh, I don't know what they're going to do. I would probably pick him up in the later rounds. Something like that, but yeah, I will pick him up in the later rounds.
Cause, he won't be there.
New England is. I mean, I wouldn't look for him because New England, they just don't. I just don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. All right. For many years now, to talk around. Stephen Jackson has been advancing age at ever-increasing miles, but he answered the question the same way he always does last season, by looking as spry as ever, remaining one of the most league's most preeminent chain movers. The yardage doesn't come in chunks for Jackson quite as often as used to. Just five of his runs went for 20 yards or longer, but he's as reliable as ever when it comes down to being a short yardage hammer. Now he went to St. Louis to a dynamic offense in Atlanta. He's 30 years old, but I like Stephen Jackson as a genuine running back one. He can run the ball. He's a damn good pass blocker. Stephen Jackson is my number 12 running back. I love his upside. I think he can be better than that, better than number 12, but I have him at 12 right now. Talk to me.
This guy's not done. You want to pick him up. All signs look to Atlanta is going all out for this Super Bowl, and they're going to run this ball. They're going to run him.
Yep. Now, this next guy, one of your favorite guys, began the season as a sixth-round long shot. He ended up with more rushing yards than anyone not named Adrian Peterson. He was not a do-it-all back as a rookie. His 11 catches were half as many as Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, for instance. But Alfred Morris was a one-dimensional player. He made sure to be elite at that one dimension. 4.8 yards per carry was fifth among featured backs, while his 83 first-down rushes were second only to Adrian Peterson's 85. He rushed for 13 rushing touchdowns, just two fewer than Adrian Foster, or Arian Foster, and he was third by Pro Football Focus count in avoiding broken tackles with 57 and 30 yards after contact with 1,001. It was a rookie season for the ages, number 11. Alfred Morris.
You should have him higher. He's the closest thing to a sure shot for fantasy. Definitely. Closest thing to a sure shot for fantasy. Mark my words. Definitely. He definitely should be either your number, in your top five for running backs you want to pick up. He had 1,500 yards. Mike Shanahan loves to run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And just by looking at the signs and stuff, Shanahan knows that this is his guy, and he's
and he's gonna throw everything behind him. Look for him to catch the ball a little bit more this year as well.
Okay. Okay. While the Browns have collected backups behind Trent Richardson, workhorse status isn't in question. Cleveland is switching to a more aggressive vertical attack, but offensive coordinator North Turner, one of my favorite head coaches, loves every down runner. He has one of T. Rich, who he plans to play closer to 223 pounds after skipping the scales in 230s last season. T. Rich, number 10 on my hit list.
I like T. Rich. Good spot for him.
Okay. This guy, I have him rated high, but I have a funny feeling he may drop off this year, and he's got fierce competition that we talked about earlier. He hails from one of your favorite cities. I'm talking about Baltimore. I'm talking about Ray Rice. He's listed in the top 10, and he's ninth on my list. He's going to probably get more touches in the pass game due to the loss of pass catchers in Baltimore. He's still a very good runner. But like I said, Bernard Pierce is right heavily on his heels. Ray Rice, number 9.
Number 9, I will have him in the top 5 as well, but number 9 isn't a bad spot for him. I like him as well. I would definitely pick him up.
Out in the Pacific Northwest, Mr. Skittles himself, beast mode is what we're talking about. Marshawn Lynch. I need to say no more. He's a dynamic runner, a very physical runner in a pass-heavy offense. Marshawn Lynch, number 8.
Yeah, I like Marshawn Lynch as well. He should also be in your top 5 as well. Really like this guy. Really like this guy. Day week in and week out, he's gonna produce.
Gone is Andy Reid and the tendency to forget the run game, and in is Chip Kelly, who hands the ball off to running backs 39% of the times in his final season at Oregon. That spells well for Mr. LeSean McCoy in a run heavy offense. I have him listed as number 7 on my hit list.
You got him overrated. I like him, but he's a little bit overrated. Don't know what Chip is going to be doing with that running game. I want to see it. Want to see more of it. Understandably, he's got it. More of that under lock and wraps. But I like that offense. Looks decent. Wouldn't take LeSean McCoy that high. Would take him, but wouldn't take him that high.
Okay. My next guy is gone is Shane Gailey. In comes Doug Marrone with a more run-heavy offense. And is this the new CJ 2K? We will see in Buffalo. We're talking about CJ Spiller, rated number 6 on my hit list.
Ooh, too high. I like him, but that's too high.
Okay.
Okay.
Did I miss somebody? No, I didn't. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Got about 2 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Next guy. He's a little banged up right now. He's one of my favorite runners. I think I missed somebody, but I can't go back and find out who it is. I'm talking about not Jesus Christ, but Jamaal Charles out of Kansas City. He's my number 4 rated running back. I like him a lot this year, especially in the pass-oriented Andy Reid offense. Talk to me.
I like him as well. Good that he's in the top 5.
Okay.
You might want to speed it up.
Yeah, next one is Arian Foster. I like him, even though he's got injury issues. I still like him in the 3 spot.